Here's a question for you. How can you become more known, liked, and trusted in your industry and connect with your ideal audience and cut through the noise if you dread the very idea of putting yourself out there in the first place? Now, I know what you're thinking, but the answer is actually quite simple. What you need to do is learn how to become the spotlight in your industry. Now, if you want to find out how to do just that, head over to www.becomethespotlight.com and go through the 3-minute free assessment to figure out how you benchmark according to the 5 principles that I've identified that some of the most inspiring and interesting people have in common who've come on the show and who have seen have an impact with their message and change the world with their stories. Head over to www.becomethespotlight.com and I can't wait to see what score you get. Hi and welcome to the Unconventionalist Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRousse, and this is the show about what it's really like to turn your message into a movement, where in each episode I sit down with some of the most inspiring and interesting people I come across to unpack and unpick their souls, their minds, their hearts about their journeys, the ups and the downs and the lessons learned from both. And it has been my life honor to share this conversation with you over the last 6 years. Now, this is a very special episode for so many reasons, but one of them is that this is going to be the final interview that I share with you. I'm going to be taking a break after this to focus on writing my book, and I just wanted to say huge thank you for all the support, love, and being with me on this journey of the last 6 years. It's too big to conceive, too many conversations to try and sum up, but there are a ton of conversations for you to go back and dive into. I really recommend you go back through the catalog, over 150 plus conversations with some of the most interesting and inspiring people you know. And the great thing is that some of them you'll definitely have heard of and some of them you'll never heard of. And they're going to be some of the biggest surprises and gifts for you. There is just so many conversations that we've had. And I wanted to handpick this very last conversation with you. I've actually intentionally picked this particular interview to be the last conversation I share with you because I find it so rich. I loved hearing, going over it again. And we dive into some of the most, for me, I find meaningful topics, such as how do we deal with shame and our own sense of inadequacy and fear of others and judgment of others? Like, how do we dance with all of that while still trying to show up in the world and create? And if you've been thinking about writing a book, then you're going to love this because Emily has been on the receiving end of my ups and down journey of writing a book. She's been part of the Scribe Media team. If you haven't listened to my conversation with Tucker Max, go back and check that out. It'll be in the show notes. And but you know, Emily has been from the get-go since last year, one of the kind of the cornerstones of the coaching program. You know, it started off with Hal and now with Chaz and Hussein and she's really seen me through that journey and still sees me through it. And I know that my journey is coming to an end where I will have to put pen to paper and start writing. But in the meantime, we get into that conversation about what are the fears that come up? Why is it so hard to know which book to pick? And Emily's got a fascinating answer to that you will want to take notes for sure. And what I love about Emily is that she's got this beautiful kind of triple whammy going on. She is a coach and helps people write their books with the Scribe Media Coaching School, but she also has been a ghostwriter helping other people write their words, and she's also writing her own book. So she really understands the intricacies of the emotional yo-yo journey of writing a book, both for yourself and for others, and she's just got so much wisdom. You know, she's trained as a yogi, and she just brings like this depth and is a wordsmith, and she's a gift to the world, and this conversation hopefully will be with a ton of value that you're going to get a lot out of it. If you have, then here's something that you can do that would mean the world to me. Let me know what the Unconventionalist Podcast has meant to you over the last 6 years over on Apple Podcasts. And you can send me an email at podcast@theunconventionalists.com if you want to drop me a message to let me know what you've loved most about the show. And if you want to send me an audio note, that's totally cool too. You can record it on your phone and then just send it to me by email. I love hearing from you that way too. And if you want to leave a rating and review on over on Apple Podcasts, that would be amazing because that would let other people know that these conversations are forever green, will be forever going on. And and it's one of these things. I actually had to sit down to re-record this. I re-recorded this conversation maybe 6-7 times and it just never felt quite right. I just had too much I wanted to say. So I'm going to shut up and I'm just going to do what I've always done, which is try and make space and room for humans who've got something valuable to share with you that can make you feel a little less alone. Because if anything, I've hoped that this podcast has changed the way you see the world, changed the way you see yourself, and changed the way you see others. Because being unconventional is that. It's about being true to who you are, being brave to be who you are, being kind with yourself and others, and having the courage to let it rip, to be off script, to be yourself, to not have to form and fold into the convention that society has said you should be. I know that to be true because, as you've heard in probably a lot of the conversation I've had on this podcast, it's been a roller coaster journey for me where the world has tried to tell me who I should be and who I shouldn't be. And this podcast was born for that. So if you want to find out more about these powerful conversations and this is the first time you've landed here, then welcome. Go over back through the catalog. You're going to have so many juicy conversations. But in the meantime, it is my utmost honor and privilege to introduce you to the one and only Emily Gindelsberger. And it feels like
no pressure.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You are live.
And then the little light is so tiny in the corner.
Yes.
Don't forget. You're live. You're here.
You're live and you're being recorded, just in case you forgot. Emily, it is so good to have you. I am both excited, nervous, and delighted that you would grace me with your time. And how are you feeling right now?
Well, you know, Mark, it's always awesome to see your face. We have obviously connected in our Scribe author communities, and I've just been so impressed with everything that you give over in that space that it really was such a delight to get your invitation and get to come and give back in some way to you over here. So thanks for having me.
We've had a long distance book relationship going for about a year now.
Across continents. It's a very Romeo and Juliet kind of thing.
It's you know, based on words, smithery, but well, no, and if you don't mind me sharing, I wanted to start with that because before we got on stage, and if you're uncomfortable, that's totally cool. But before we got on stage, you kind of said, I've got to be honest, I'm a little bit nervous about this. And I feel that that's such a beautiful place to start because a lot of guests feel that, but don't necessarily name it. And I would just love to hear more about what you mean by that and what's the experience going on around that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think perhaps you aren't going to experience this kind of thing when you publish your book because you already have all of these media set up. Like, you know how to navigate this world. But for me, like, I am, as you know, I'm working on my own memoir. I also do all of this work over in book coaching that really lights me up. And I am quite terrified of publishing this thing and then like having to talk about myself and my life. So part of, you know, me coming on here, I'm like, what is he going to ask me about? You know, is he going to be asking me about my professional work or what I'm working on with the book and like, what would I actually want to talk about? So my goal is really to just kind of, trust your interest and trust my own curiosity, and we'll just follow
That is where every great conversation starts. Like I always say to friends, right, or people, clients, or people I work with, I'm like, do you go to the bar or to a restaurant or a coffee shop or down the park with your mate with like a set description of questions or topic? You don't. That'd be absurd. You'd think that's crazy. Well, it's the same thing with a good podcast conversation. It's like, I have an intention, right? I've got an idea where I'd love to have this conversation with at least a few milestones or a few water stations along this lovely little walk. But apart from that, it's who knows where is this goes. And I want to pick up on something you said. So you said, you know, I think your assumption was around like you probably won't feel the same kind of stuff when you go out with your book because you've been navigating. Like, how wrong can you be? Because that is exactly right. Like, I mean, you know this. And intimately, and the reason, one of the reasons I said I was excited, nervous, and delighted, the nervous part was because, A, this is always striving for truth, right? Like an honest, candid, free-flowing conversation. But also because it's a little bit like if I brought my therapist on the podcast and had a conversation with my therapist. Because, like, you've seen iterations of, like, my... I can't do this, Emily. This is crazy. Why should I do this book? I've got 1,000 things. So there's definitely an aspect of that I want to talk about. We're going to get that in a second. But you just mentioned that you're working on your memoir, which I know you are, which you've been, right? Like, I know you've been sharing that journey as well. So many people I know listening to this and who I speak to have a story inside of them that they want to say, whether that's the written format, whether that's the audio podcast format or the stage speaking format or whatever with blog, but have some deep fears around mm-hmm. what comes with that. So this question's in two part. Number one, throughout your years, the 4 years, I think you're at Scribe now. I think that's around 4 years. Maybe I've made that up. But mm-hmm. So you've seen a lot of authors, 700 plus authors have been published through Scribe. Maybe the number's changed since I last looked at the number. Number one, what have you seen as some of the most common fears that come up with the idea, especially around, I'm going to go with memoir in this particular aspect. And number two, any tips you can give, actually, we'll start with that. Number one, let's just start with that. What are some of the most common fears that you've heard and maybe that you want to experience yourself, that you want to express yourself that you're going through? Maybe that can be a lovely little bridge.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the thing I very commonly see in other authors that's in my mind now because I'm going through it myself, you know, it's certainly one thing to be a guide for someone because you know a process and you know how to help them through it. And then it's obviously a very, very different thing to be walking that terrain yourself and realize like, oh, my terrain is both the same as I yes. told them theirs would be and feels qualitatively very different. Mm-hmm. And what I see in other authors that's, again, happening with myself right now is that the stories we are most protective about and most afraid of whether they're the right ones to tell and whether they will make an impact, those are like the most powerful pieces. Like hands Amen. Down every time they are. And it's so freaking scary. Yeah. And it kind of yeah. sucks, right? Like yeah. in my book, I started this memoir thinking I was just going to tell some fun, flirty stories about like sex and relationships and connection. Yeah. And then the whole thing just kind of kept metastasizing on me. And now the book is very, very different as a result of realizing like, okay, behind the stories that I'm comfortable telling are all these moments that I am uncomfortable sharing yes. for whatever reason, because I'm afraid people will judge me or I'm afraid of even like looking into it myself and like seeing my own truth in some aspects.
And so I jump in a lot, just FYI, I'm a messy dancer. I kind of like step on people's feet all the dance. So so when you say I'm afraid of what people might think, right, judgment, break that down for people, right? Like, is it someone in particular? Is it like the metaphorical judgment of a group of people? Is it colleagues? Is it family? Is it partners? Like, just where does that fear live?
Yeah, it's so interesting because the fear started out feeling very close to me. When I was writing in private, it was very much this, I'm afraid what my partner will think, what my family will think, what my closest friends will think. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've written a whole draft, I've edited a bunch of it. I'm on a kind of a rewrite now as I have discovered a deeper layer I need to go. But after editing it, I showed my draft to many of those people that I was so afraid of judging me. And the result was exactly the opposite. Like sharing my work, the response I got was like, oh, wow, you really let me get to know you. Like I already knew you. And now I know so much more about your inner experience and, and sharing my work really opened up a lot of beautiful conversations with people in my life and broke down the vulnerability I was feeling so that I could be less guarded and really, really go there with people. Because the thing was, I was afraid of other people judging me, but what I was really doing was protecting parts, you know, and like not showing parts of myself to others. And so this process really helped me to some degree just leap off the cliff and start doing it. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the response was, you know, this really beautiful sense of connection. And now that fear is getting pushed out to like the next layer out, you know, like I'm no longer afraid of what loved ones will think of me, but I am afraid of like people in my that I'm writing about who intersect mm-hmm. with my story, who will probably mm-hmm. recognize themselves. And I don't know if they will like my perception of like the instances we've shared together in some cases, you know? And so there's this, like, I'm afraid of these middle distance people judging me. Who, like, I also am currently making decisions about, like, which of those people do I want to draw closer in my life and which ones am I gonna kind of hold a bit more boundary around. And the book has been really clarifying for helping me see, no, here's my truth in amid all these worries and fears I have. Here's my truth at the core of that. And I do want to bring closer the people that resonate with that truth. And I do want to push away the people that don't. And that's okay. And now it's the work of using my book to help me be brave and do that.
Yes. And I want to get more into that for sure around the courage and bravery and staying on the topic of fearing what people's reactions are. So I'm currently leading this at the time of recording this. I'm leading a 6-week program on helping people unpack their story, who want to go out and do podcasts, who want to go and do stages and that kind of stuff. And unanimously, like, one of the biggest fears they get is that it is not only just what would people think of me, but who am I to disturb the peace within my family?
Yeah.
Right. And especially like, I think there's one thing, and maybe you could relate to this. I think there's one thing around, I acted in a way that I deem shameful or embarrassing, and I'm willing to speak about it, and I'm fearing the reaction of, because of the event, with something happened to me or something happened around me. And I want to talk about that. And that involves me naming or talking about somebody else in my family. And then deep fear comes around that. Right. And maybe you can relate to that. Maybe you've seen that with other scribe authors as well. And I guess the question I have for you around that is, any thoughts to navigate that tricky dilemma, or that internal dilemma of, I know that I cannot be authentic without naming this part, and this deep fear and almost belief that people are entitled to privacy. Yes. My family are entitled. Yeah. And just to be clear, when I talk about this, we can talk about being physical, violent, emotionally abusive, sexual abuse, like trauma, right? We're talking about stuff that usually tends to be quite heavy and loaded. What are some of the, just thoughts you have on that? I'd love to hear your brain and your heart.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting in my experience is that I don't have a lot of overt, what I'd call like capital T trauma to point to. You know, in fact, I've found that in writing about these memories, writing about my life, some of the hardest stories to tell are like the really, really subtle stories. The stories where something small happened, but it illustrated something big happening within myself. And by telling that story, I kind of have to claim my own sensitivity around it, which is scary, right? Like other people are going to read this thing and they're going to be like, well, why did you react so big to what in the end seems like a small thing? And the more that I step into that, and the more that I write into that and let myself go there and explore it, the more settled I get around the judgment that I fear from others. Because the judgment I fear from others is really just, one, it's not happening yet because I haven't shown these people my book, right? It's like, it's literally all still happening in my mind. Yes. And so my fear of judgment is a projection of my judgment of myself. And the more that I let myself into my own stories, let myself explore around, let myself feel all the things that come up with that, the more I become, again, like settled with who I am, more willing to hold who I am. And then I become less afraid of what other people will think because I've already thought all the things of myself, right? Like I've already judged myself in that way. I've already worked through my own judgment and I don't fear it from other people anymore.
And I'm going to go and assume that you, like me, like many others listening, you're probably one of your worst critics, right? Like the person that can do most damage is yourself. Like what I'm hearing, I just want to paint that and tell me if it's the right brush. It's something around when you look at it, the external fear that you're projecting is really a reflection and an opportunity to go within and see what can you not be with? And what have you not yet owned or healed or accepted about yourself, that once you do, the external fear that first triggered that thought process then becomes almost obsolete, or at least diminished in some way.
Yeah. And of course, this is, it comes in stages, right? Like I feel that way now about the idea of sharing certain stories that feel well processed. And each time that I get a step closer to sharing more of that work with people, you know, those fears come up and they are the same size that is equivalent to the risk I feel I'm taking and the benefit that I might get if I do it. So I'm certainly not saying like, oh, well, I explored my stories and now I'm all good. And like, nothing, I will never be afraid of these things again. That's totally. It's more that I'm coming into continual changeable relationship with my fear. And that part is the more important part to navigate than to try to get rid of it.
Yeah. And there's something that, so I call it, I don't know what, if there's a technical term to it, but I call it vulnerability hangover, which is... I'll say something, right? Like maybe I'm on a podcast or maybe I'm on stage or I'm even in a session with a coach or a therapist or whatever. And I'll say something and then I deeply regret it. Like this sense of dread. Like, you know, like, so I interviewed this fascinating man called Boyd Vaarty. He's a South African lion hunter, like fourth or fifth generation. Lion hunter. That's it. And he doesn't hunt to kill, right? He finds lions for touristic purposes to be able to show. And he now uses the same, you'd be fascinated by this conversation, by the way. He uses the same techniques that he was taught from a very young age on how to read the landscape, right? From like branches, twigs being broken to mud paths on the ground to the surds, the sound of birds will determine if it's a python or if it's an antelope, like just reading basically the field, right? And he applies that now with humans around healing people, right? So he helps people find their life track. That's the kind of like the gist of it. But one of the things, so we're having this conversation, right? And I don't know why, but I asked permission. I said, do I have a permission to share with you a story that's sensitive? And I went down this road of sharing this, like a childhood trauma event, which I still haven't really processed. That's why I don't really talk about it and haven't really spoken about it openly. So I speak about this event in the podcast. We have a quick chat about it. I hung up. I kid you not, Emily, like for the next 24 hours, I was just like in my own shame, in my own doubts. Was that even okay for me to talk about that to him? Like I just threw that as a bomb and blah, 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 blah. And I think what have you, I guess the question I'm pointing to is, what have been some of your ways of being with shame or facing shame and dancing with shame?
Oh boy, that is such a good question because me and my shame have been, we've been dancing away. Yeah. And man, the vulnerability hangover is so real. Like I'll probably get one just from this conversation, right? And it'll be like, it won't be later today. It'll be tomorrow morning. I will literally wake up with like a headache. It's just, you know, it's how it goes. Yeah. We're processing stuff. So I, as a practice to navigate shame and really any emotions, but shame is one that really is quite dominant for me. And it's the one that'll stop me in my tracks the most. I'm sure that I'm not alone in that.
Yes.
And I've developed this practice of, I call it meditation, but I'm very hesitant to use that word because I trained as a yoga teacher. I learned to meditate in a very classic way, you know, that's like sit down and be still and don't have a goal, but have this goal of like clearing your mind and not getting attached to your thought. You know, now my meditations look much more like I sit on the floor of my office or I lay or I crouch or I do get in whatever position is comfortable. And then I just ask my body, like, what do you need to feel right now? It's really just about giving myself time and space to deliberately ask and then let myself feel. And it's been amazing what's come through doing that. You know, it'll take 15, 20 minutes, sometimes an hour. And I try really hard not to let my mind get involved in explaining that process to myself, although it certainly does, you know.
Sure.
And instead, I try to just sit with, what are those feelings? How do they feel in my body? Like, how can I focus on those sensations? Mm-hmm. And boy, that practice, and I have to do it frequently. I do this mm-hmm. several times a week, almost every day. That practice has been the thing that teaches me how to feel things and mm-hmm. like survive, essentially. You know, like I can feel this big well of shame and not try to change it, and I won't die, and I'll be fine, you know, 20 minutes later when it's over. It's helped me develop a lot of trust in myself to be able mm-hmm. to go through those emotions and see that I didn't die.
It's almost like shame hygiene, right? It's kind of like this process of just you know, having a daily practice, or at least some form of moment that you know you go back to, and you know, it's like the body keeps the score, right? It's kind of mm-hmm. like letting your body know that, hey body, I'm here, I'm taking your call, I'm hearing you, and I'm just checking in with you, you know? I love that.
I adapted that practice from a really brilliant coach and psychologist, Valerie Rain, who lives in Tucson here. Actually, I met her through Scribe. She was an author. Okay. We worked together on her book. And I had the amazing privilege of getting to actually go to her retreats and participate in her work. Mm-hmm. She's incredible. And she does this thing called, I think she calls it like emotional flossing. Which is similar. It's like, you know, you just kind of take yourself through each emotion in turn. You let yourself feel anger. You let yourself feel sadness. And she kind of maps it out, like you really push yourself through those five or six, whatever, basic emotions. Mm-hmm. Mine's a bit more freeform now because I find that my body will be a lot more interesting if I just let her go and pay attention than if I try to direct the show. But it does feel like flossing. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Cause the other thing is that, so you've been at Scribe now for 4 years, and you know, we had Tucker on the show, and so one of the things that you get to do is that you get to speak with authors, right? And like, I joined the program about a year ago in terms of, I forgot what the name it was, like Scribed Authors or Guided Authors, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we have like calls we can book with you. Back in the day was Hal. And so you got on the receiving end of a lot of people who haven't necessarily published on their book yet, but are going through the whole feels, right? And so if you had, this is going to sound like a weird question, right? But if you had to sum up in just a few words without needing them to be, you know, perfect, whatever, what do you think are the things that come up the most for people who say they want to have a book, they want to write a book, or they're called to write a book for whatever reason, but then get stuck, get lost, get whatever? What are some of like the most common things that come up for you?
Oh man, I'm so tempted to turn that question around on you. Like, what's come up for you? Because I think you're quite emblematic of what's a really common journey for most people. Yeah. How is that? Well, how does that evolve for you?
You know what's so funny? Because I was speaking with, I interviewed Jodie Cook on the show. She's amazing. She's like, I'll send the episode, but she is a powerlifter for Team GB. She wrote like 4 books, whatever it is, just got 2 of her books nominated for Best Business Book Awards at the same ceremony. Like a freak of nature, she's awesome. And I gave her the Scribe, like I sent her to the Scribe method, and she got the book and she read the book, and she's writing her next book based on the Scribe method. And I was telling her, I was like, oh, I'm going to speak with Emily. And I said, one of the things I love most about Emily's style of facilitating is often when you got a question, your first reaction isn't to answer it, but to reflect it back and kind of go, what do you think, or what comes up for you, or what do you make up about that question? So I just want to acknowledge you for that, because that's what you just did, right?
Well, and I did it because, this is something really important that I've been learning, particularly as a coach, but learning as I receive coaching from other people too, is like the answer that you come up with for yourself is always far more powerful than just getting an answer from someone, right? And anytime that you have a question, it's because you've already been playing with the opportunity of that question, you know? I'm a big fan of
the opportunity of that question. That is a beautiful way of putting it. We'll continue the conversation in just a minute. In the meantime, I wanted to let you know that over the years, I've been so frustrated hearing so many talented people just struggle with the lack of visibility and reputation and attention and awareness from their ideal audience because of the fear of putting themselves out there. And I'm just tired of knowing that there are so many best kept secrets out there that the world needs to know about. So I've come up with a plan, and that plan has got 5 steps, and you can go and find out at www.becomethespotlight.com how you can come up with the 5 principles in your own business and life that can enable you to show up and step up and serve in a big way and in a way that feels congruent to your own core values. This is not about becoming who you're not. This is not about pretending to be someone you're not. This is about being you, showing up and stepping up so you can serve. That's www.becomethespotlight.com. Go and take the free 3-minute survey so you can find out where you benchmark, where you can improve, and where you can celebrate. I can't wait to see what score you get. Now let's get back to our powerful conversation. Well, okay, so here's the thing. It's interesting because I still very much feel like a mess, like I was almost a year ago. I just go through like these waves, even though.
Hey,
like,
me too.
But it's like, yeah. It feels like the same mess. But I think if I had to, an illustration, I want people to imagine a line that goes from the bottom left to the top right, and it's like a tumble dryer going up it, right? That's how it mm-hmm. feels, as opposed to kind of mm-hmm. like being on the same spot. So my biggest fears have been originally, I think the fears were around, I don't know what book to write. I think that was getting stuck with the idea of, I have all these ideas of books and I don't know. And that was, you know, you remember in April last year, I spoke with Hal, and Hal was like, until you figure out what your business is going to be, you're going to struggle to figure out what your book is. So I think, I feel like I went on that journey of up and down of figuring out. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I don't really know what the book is right now, but I'm going to go ahead and write everything that's in my head and just dump it on a piece of paper. That's when I went through the writing sprint from November to December and wrote 76,000 words of just like vomit, basically. And then I was speaking with other scribe community members like Jada Selner. And
yeah, I like, love her interview.
Yeah, she's so cool. Yeah, she's awesome. And so I was like, she was the one who said, I think you've got probably a few books in here. Like, I think this could be a book, that could be a book or whatever. So then I was like, okay, there are 3 books that I can see for sure that I want to write at some point. And it was like Overcoming Imposter Syndrome. Second one was Sharing Your Story. Third one was like Finding Meaning and Purpose, right? Then came another thing which I did not expect. And anybody listening to this from Scribe community, please pay attention. Listen to Emily. Listen to Tucker. And 99.9% of you listening will not want to go down a traditional publishing route, will not want to go down through the hassle of getting an agent, will not want to go down through the hassle of getting coming up with a book proposal. Trust me. Okay? I've now got stuck in that loop where I've gone down the traditional publishing way. I've got like a literary agent was excited to represent me. I've got a book offer on the table. I'm now in conversation with like 4 or 5 different publishers. One in particular, and I'll tell you offline more about it, but is excited about the project. But I'm still, we are now March, whenever it is, right? Mid-March. That means it's been 3 months that I've done no writing. No, none of that. Just in pure behind the scenes conversations, proposals, adaptations, and blah, blah, blah. And my soul's dying a little bit more by the minute. Mm. And so I've come back to the original fear of, well, actually, let me say this. And I think we talked about this in one of the Q&A calls where I got the contract and I freaked out. I don't know if I said this in the Q&A call or not. So I get the contract mm-hmm. and this whole, and I hope people listening to this can maybe identify to this, or hopefully it'll serve some way. But I had always dreamt of getting a book deal because of the validation, purely, honestly, because I thought if I get a book deal, then someone else sees me and therefore I'm not stupid. And therefore the 6-year-old kid who was bullied at school by his teachers because he couldn't spell, you know, can go, look, teacher, you're mean, mm-hmm. but I got a book deal. In 30 years from now, I'm going to get a book deal and, you know, middle finger to you, whatever.
I was chosen. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. I was chosen mm-hmm. and look at me, badge of honor, all this kind of stuff, right? But the opposite happened. I got the book deal. I went through the contract and I went through like this phase of, I wouldn't call it depression because it's a bit too hard of a word, but I just went like, my energy just sapped. And it's a mix of things, right? It's a mix of things of like, it was the legal jargon. It was like the realization of what you hand over. It was the realization of like, there are now commitments. You have to hit deadlines and otherwise there are penalties and blah, blah, blah. So that
and can
got
I just
me, yeah, yeah, please.
Frame for one moment. Thank God you weren't then bowled over by the excitement of being chosen. I see so yeah. many people just get caught up with that emotion, and then they don't see all of these other emotions hiding underneath, right? That are yeah. still there, like the deadlines, the legal issues, yeah. the ownership of your work, all those questions are still there, and you can't often see them clearly if the thrill of validation is kind of still playing out.
Yeah.
So that's for well, what that's worth. So what, yeah.
Well, no, what you're speaking to is exactly right. What I realized, and by the way, I just want to make it clear, I'm extremely grateful and honored for the book deal I got. I had a great chat with the publisher, and she was honestly amazing. She was like, look, go out there, you know, go hunt, whatever it's called, shop around, I think the technical term is, you know, come back to me, the offer's on the table, whatever. But that is what you're speaking to is so true. And we talked about this a little bit with Tucker, but it was like, ultimately, I'm so fucking terrified of this book. I'm terrified because it like, it's a mirror. And I've been leaning into this, mate, and I've been going to therapy, right? And I've been talking about this, but it's kind of like, I am terrified of, it's multiple layers, right? One of them is that the world won't love me at my worst, that you're not going to love me at my worst, right? That you're going to see that I'm full of shit and that I'm a big fraud. That it will not be the expectation of the book I want it to be. Like the book that I write will not be to the standard of my soul yearning. Mm-hmm. And that I'll regret it, that I'll write a book, you know, 18 months from now, and I'll be like, this is not really the book. But ultimately, what I think I'm not saying is that I won't be truthful the way that I need to, because yes. I have still unresolved, deep shit that I'm still dealing with and holding on to. And I really struggle to marinate between, decouple the internal turmoil and roller coaster of what this life messiness of being a human is with showing up. In a way, in a book that serves. That's a long answer, and I don't know if that answers it. But
yeah,
but,
so that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And I think that is, you know, back to your original question, like what are kind of the hurdles that people face along their book? What stops them? What causes them not to write? Those are all the classic ones. And I would say this one that you started out with, like the nugget of it. Was I don't know what I'm going to write. I don't know what my book is.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, man. I've worked quite a lot in the last several years around this idea of I don't know. There's something about writing a memoir that, like, you know, I go to write a memory, for example, and I promise this will be relevant in a second. I go to write a memory,
no,
for
go.
Example.
I love it.
And, you know, I try to remember what happened and I can't, right? And so then I sit there in front of my computer and I'm like, well, I don't know what happened. I don't know. Mm. How did I feel? I don't know. What did I think? I don't know. And I literally wrote it all over my manuscript. I was like, I don't know. And I turned that into Tucker after I had edited it, after I thought, okay, this is like the best book I can do right now. And he just flagged every one of those. And he was like, really? Come on. Like, this is the work of the memoir. This is what you came here to do, is to answer the question of I don't know.
Yes.
And as I grapple with that, I don't know is really just a cover for overwhelm. What I find often happens for me is that I say I don't know, and then I just stop there.
Is
I let
well
that
self-protect?
Be the answer. Oh, both. Those always go together, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Overwhelm is like too much is happening, and so I need to shut some doors on my life so that I can contain things, right?
It.
It's totally self-protective.
Yes.
And so I don't know became a stopping point for me.
Yes.
A safe stopping point.
100%.
Yeah, I don't have to make decisions if I don't know. And the consequence of that, there's a huge, huge downside beyond just not being able to then act on what I want to be able to do. And the huge downside is that if I stop at I don't know, I'm actually betraying the part in myself that does know. And there always is a part.
It's like the kidnapped part. It's, yes. It's like the metaphor that came up from you. You said that it's the Harry Potter underneath the staircase closet part, right? Mm-hmm. It's the all knowing, all loving part that's like, actually, I do. Like, I'm here, just, you know, mm-hmm. but I'm beyond the I don't know. I used to forbid my clients in coaching settings to use the words I don't know because they're an instant blocker to anything. And I actually used to say, make it up.
Yes. That's what I do now.
I'm like, make it up.
Yeah. In my memoir, when I'm trying to write a memory where I legitimately don't remember what happens, I ask myself what happened. I sit and I do my weird little squirmy shame wrestling meditation thing. Yes. And then I come back to my computer and I say, okay, well, let's make up the next detail that feels true. Let's at least put that down so that we can test whether it feels true. Right. Mm-hmm. And you kind of do that one detail at a time. And then you realize you actually can fill in a lot of the gaps in your memory, or you can fill in a lot of the gaps in your knowing in the case of, you know, deciding what book to write. Yeah. And so often when I see authors grapple with the question of, I don't know what book to write, the real thing that's going on is I have many books that I can write and I am afraid of all of them. And I am especially afraid of making the decision as to which one to pursue now because it shuts off all the possibilities of the others. And when the book stays amorphous in our head, it can remain great. As soon as we start to put it down on paper, it gets all like, can I swear? It gets all like fucked up. But it gets really convoluted because, you know, then we actually have to do the real sorting and clarifying. Yes. And so that's a scary process to take the thing that is pristine because it doesn't actually exist yet and try to make it exist, but it's going to be this mutant and we know that and to let it allow it to be what it needs to be.
And what's interesting is you said that what came up for me was relationships, how much we do the same in relationships, in some relationships around, we may have an ideal of a partner and then we've got like all these potential partners and we're like having to pick one or go into that direction feels so vulnerable and scary because how do I know this is going to be the right thing? And what comes up for me a lot around what you're saying is around trust. Like I feel like there's almost like, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but for me it's, I disconnect from my own power in terms of my trust of myself that I deeply know. And so what I do is I lean into everyone else, right? I reach out to anyone and everyone I can. What do you think? What do you know? Like, so I go externally in order to feel the internal feeling of I'm enough. I got this, you know, stay curious, trusty. Does that make sense?
Yes, it absolutely makes sense. And so much of that resonates with my own personal journey and my professional experience, you know, working on my own book and working with other people. And I think with you too, it seems like, forgive me for projecting for a moment, please correct if this is wrong, but as I saw you connect about that book deal and see the interest that was there in your work, I kind of saw that externalization process happening, right? Where it was like, oh, I wonder under the surface, is Mark still solving for what book do I want to write? Or is he reaching out for what book do other people want from me?
Yes.
And neither of them is, both are good tracks, right? But only one comes from within.
100% was happening. And then I've got to give credit to David Over, who came in my path, who was on my newsletter, actually. So I've got a newsletter, which I send out like musings and kind of just riffs and stuff like that comes up, usually very intimate, open stuff. And he's on the newsletter and I wrote something about the whole imposter, right? And like the irony of being, feeling like an imposter, writing about imposter. And he replied, and he's amazing. Like he used to work in traditional publishing for a big publishing house in the marketing department. And he gracefully gave some time up so we could connect on Zoom and talk me through some stuff. And one of the things he really gave me, which he's really pushed in me, it's like, it's almost, and you know, that's not necessarily his intention, but it's almost like, screw anyone. Like, it doesn't matter. This book is going to be birthed one way or another. I'm just putting a feeler to see if you're interested in making this really big and help me give it more fuel than I could do it on my own. But this is the book. As opposed to, hey, Emily, so I've got this book idea. Like, what do you think of that? Oh, you want me to drop that? No problem. You want me to book? Because this was happening. Mm-hmm. That was happening. As I was going through conversations with publishers, they'd say, oh, yeah, that's interesting, but we really like that piece. If you make it about that, then we're interested. And I would get so many mixed messages. Some people would say, storytelling is oversaturated, but imposter's got some legs. Imposter syndrome, it does, like, is completely saturated, but this personal story thing, like, you know what I mean? And then it was, mm-hmm. it was really, David was like pushing me and saying, you're doing it again. Because I was doing mock-ups. Like, I did a mock-up of my book with like Sunday Times bestseller. And he's like, who gives a shit? He was like, who gives a shit about all of that? Like, you know, but he's like a maverick. Like, you know, he really is. He's like the Ryan Holiday of England, but like a maverick version. And he was just like, you kept on pushing me and you picked up. That's exactly right. I think I was going out there with the intention of validate me. Pick me so I can have an extra badge to the world to say, you see, you still can't see the real me because I'm hiding behind this badge. It's a bigger badge now. The more badges I collect, the less you're going to see me. Whereas the change has been whether publisher picks it up or not, it doesn't matter because this book's coming. That's kind of what's changed, I think. The only difference is that I've come to the conclusion that if a really big publisher's interested, and we can really make something magic of it and really big, then great. If not, then I'll hybrid it, right? Like I'll go for like one of these models. But it's anyone listening to this, thinking about writing a book, it is one of the most beautiful and difficult journeys I find personally. Because if you're willing to do the work, right? Because I'm sure you must, I mean, I'm not saying you personally know authors, but you must have come across people who are like not willing to go and face their shit and kind of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that doesn't always result in a bad book. It doesn't always tank things. It sometimes does. Yeah. You know, and oh, this comes back to something you said earlier about. Okay. Let me take a moment to remember.
It's okay.
You had said that one of the big fears of your book was that you will get judged by others.
Yes. Yeah.
And that the book won't be as good as it could be.
Well, that it won't do as well, right? You said that it comes out in bombs.
Yeah, and you said it with more detail than that. But one thing I wanted to comment on was that when you bring those. Again, that judgment you fear from others, it's just your own judgment, you know, to work through in yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you bring that into your writing, when you invite that judgment to be your writing partner, you won't write the best book that you can. Because what will happen is you will generalize. I see that so much, right? Like people don't want to talk about their personal insights and wisdom. They want to talk about, oh, in the world, this is how the world works. And like, if you understand this, everything will be amazing. But they don't want to drill down to like the real nitty gritty of how that worked in their lives. And so things feel non-specific. They feel generalized. They feel very like inspirationally focused, but with no anchor. That's what happens when we're guarding ourselves, when we protect against our own self-judgment, we tend to write in a very distanced way. I'm seeing this in my own memoir, like places where instead of really writing down into a memory, a specific moment in my life, I get scared of that and I pull back and I like explain how I was thinking and feeling and explain my whole, you know, like all these anxieties going on in my brain. And none of that fucking matters.
Yeah.
Like when I actually have the courage to go into the specific moments and scenes of my life and really look at like, where are these times when I formed these beliefs and felt these things? I realize, oh, that really was all going on in my head. And like, there is so much of of that anxiety and that worry and that judgment that I can let go of, because yes. now I'm actually like seeing my life clearly. And I think that it really requires to write a really good book requires vulnerability and honesty. And in order to do that, I personally have to make a commitment to myself every time I sit down that I'm going to stay by my own side as I write. Like I'm not going to abandon myself into judgment. I'm going to watch what's coming up for me. I'm going to hold myself well through that. I'm going to let myself sit in that. And it's not a quick solve and it's not 100% solve, but it helps me get more authentic. And it also helps me see what's going on in other people's writing so much more clearly too.
And what came up for me as you said that was, you know, I think we mentioned this a little bit earlier on around this idea of the fear that we project is really an unmet need that we have for ourselves.
Yes.
Right. Ugh. And it's like, and if we find a way to be at peace and at home with all that we are, the truth and the ugly and the pretty and the everything in between, whatever label works for you, then whatever the world throws at you will feel a little less sharp. Right. Like that's what I got really clear as you said that. I was like, man, the reason why I'm so afraid of what the world will think of my book is because I am afraid of what I think of myself. Mm-hmm. Right. And so shit, like as long as we've got that carrying around, no, like it's almost like it's a weird like open wound kind of thing. And like, oh, as soon as the world touches it, it's going to feel sensitive. But it's because I haven't tended to my own garden or your, like, you know, as the metaphorical eye, right? But how scary that is. And again, the book is an opportunity, as you said, like a question opportunity. The book is an opportunity to take a flashlight and to go in that cave that we've built over the years and kind of like kick things in there or thrown things in there or dragged ourselves.
Is that
back
how you
out.
Treat your inner self, yeah. Mark?
No, but like
kicking and throwing shit around.
No,
in there.
No. But it's so interesting because it's like an unraveling in a way. It's like this work, and I've got to give, you know, and I've told Tucker this. Like it's when I prepared Tucker's interview, something showed up for me which I never allowed myself to do because his whole journey was around. Really, he never let he wasn't feeling what he needed to feel to do the work, right? Like he could talk about it, you know, he's a smart ass, like he can write well, you know, he can use humor as a deflection mechanism and he uses smarts as a blockade system, all this stuff. But when he actually looked into it and was kind of going, actually, I've been avoiding, I can, and as I was doing this research, I'm like, man, I do that. I've done that. And I had to go back to moments of my life and these deep emotions came out of me, and like, just like, in tears, right? And I'm almost, it's not that I've come to saturation because I know there's so much more, but I feel like there's only so much you can take. Like, and I've just been in that tumbleweed, and it's like holding that dearly. The deconstruction of self, almost like if you could open up, right, an IKEA furniture or a watch mechanism. And you open it up and you go, huh, what are the parts that I intentionally want to keep? And what are the parts that I've added along the way from people's shit and my fears and inadequacies and feelings and blah, blah, blah. And unpicking that has been so rooted deep down, you know, that is what I find so hard. And especially when you start becoming aware of all the other stuff that you're not yet willing or ready to, but knowing they're there. I don't know, I just backed out there for a second, but
yeah, no, that's incredible. And I think a really weird, I say weird because it's counterintuitive to me. I used to think that this idea of going in the cave and mining the shadow was about finding the shadow so you can fix it. Right. So you can like change it. So you can like pull it out of there. So you can manipulate it in some way.
You can't hide anymore. Wizard of Oz. It's you.
I got this flashlight. Yeah. I can just blow you out of here.
Yeah, the mag light. Going in the mag light. Yeah.
The hardest thing and the most important thing has been, for me personally, being willing to go in there and see the parts that I hide about myself, that I am ashamed of in myself, that I am afraid of in myself, and not do a goddamn thing to change them. That has been the hardest part.
Can I push it even further?
Yeah.
Not only just to not change a goddamn thing about them, but how do you love them?
Yes. Because the only way you can love them is to see them fully without changing them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that for me is the scariest, for sure. Mm-hmm. This idea that what would that say about me if I accept them? Then I'm imperfect.
Yes. Yes. Right? What will people think of me if I accept the super angry parts of myself?
There you go. Yeah, the sexual parts of me, the angry parts of me, the jealous parts of me, like almost like if there's this idea, like an idealization of self that I project to the world of like what I strive to be, right? Like imagine you had like 10 marks out of 10 and 10 different areas that I need to tick all of them. And anyone that falls part of that, it's like I need to fix it, shame it or hide it. And I've always battled with that, this idea that we need darkness for light, that there's no light without shadow. Mm-hmm. And that actually the people who I've met who are some of the most compelling humans are people who've embraced and they're no longer fighting, because for me, the more I fight them, the more destructive my behavior becomes, right? Like the more I act out, the more I do things which are not in line with who I want to be. And that is... And I wish I had a magic pill. I wish, because I've just looked at the time, like, oh my God, that flew by. I wish I had a pill that I could just go, oh my God, Emily, I'm self-acceptance and all loving and being and I'm whole. Oh, yes.
We don't even need to publish books. We accept everything. It's cool.
Yeah. I don't even need to write anything. I'm good. Like, you know.
There's your spiritual bypass bridge right there. Like, you don't need to write your book, Mark. You can just... Right. Yeah. You know, and even this idea of light and shadow is starting to create friction for me right now with where I'm at. Because Label. It does. It creates this idea of like still good things and bad things. I mean, that's how my brain is dealing with it. And instead, I've been really trying to think of it more as like blue a and vocabulary yellow. Of self. Like, how much more dimension can I uncover? How much more can I see, experience, understand? And weirdly, the more that I let, not weirdly, it totally makes sense, the more that I let myself see my own anger, see my own, shadow aspects, and accept them as just as full parts of me as everything else, the more that I'm willing to see them in other people, and then I can work artfully with all of that, right?
Ain't that the truth? How many times do I have to catch myself thinking that I get triggered by someone, but really it's because they're representing or they're mirror back to me something I can't be with myself, right? Mm-hmm. So someone who is overtly confident or dominant or sexual or loud or abrupt, whatever it is, are elements that I don't allow myself to be with and that I certainly don't allow myself. And I just wanted to pull out a quote as that reminded me of this. I love this quote. It says, I myself am made entirely of flaws stitched together with good intentions by Augustin Burroughs. Emily, it's been an absolute joy. I know we're coming to the end. And before we end, I want to... a heartfelt thank you for, and then Siri comes along as he does. I wanted to give a heartfelt thank you for the support that you provided. Let me just put this off. Siri keeps on coming up in random moments.
She's trying to speak to you, man.
I know. It's like weird, right?
what is Siri saying? Idea.
Yeah. But so before we wrap up, I do want to say, thank you for being you, for showing up, for always gracefully holding the room and the space in our weekly Q&As. And I know I can't always be there, but when I do, I love showing up and hanging out with all of you. And also for being a muse to so many people's wounds and desires and dreams, and being a book midwife in that sense. It's like, it is a beautiful work. And I hope you know it. I hope you're reminded of it. If not, I wanted to remind you today that the work that you do matters and that you matter. And the last thing I want to say is your memoir matters, because if anything, it's who you become in the process of birthing it, right? And then how much more can you show up for people who are going through the same stuff?
Yeah. Oh, Mark, thank you so much.
Of course.
Thank you. And my
last questions, of course, is what does being unconventional mean to you?
Oh, thinking and acting for myself. Just as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Radical and simple. Where can people find out more about you? If people want to connect and reach out, and maybe something that you said really resonated and they wanted to thank you and cheer you on your route to writing your memoir and tell you like, I'll buy a copy, Emily, like just put me on your, you know, put me down. And where can people reach out? Are you anywhere online? Like, I know you're on Instagram. I don't know if that's private or public.
But. Yeah, I'm on Instagram as Emily Gindle, G-I-N-D-L-E. I don't ever post on there, so you won't find any media from me, but you can DM me over there. And people can feel free to email me, emily@scribemedia.com.
Okay. And how, last but not least, how do you pronounce your name properly?
Gindlesberger.
There you go. For the record, Gindlesberger. Yeah. Okay. Emily, I appreciate you. I'll see you on the road. And thank you so much for coming. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Mark.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. It is one of my favorite conversations. I think the depth at which we went and the scope of what we covered, and really helping anyone who's thinking about writing a book, but more importantly, coming up with a creative outlet, is going to be beneficial for you and anyone you share this with. So please feel free to share this conversation with anyone you want. If you want to connect with Emily and find out more about her work, then make sure to go and click in the show notes. That's going to be at www.theunconventionalist.com/episode/157. But you can click that link in the show notes wherever you're listening this from. And I want to say thank you. I had this plan of coming up with like this big episode and announcing all this kind of stuff, but really, I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. It's been an honor, it's been a privilege, and I'd love for you to go through the conversations, listen back to some of your favorite episodes, and let me know over at podcast@theunconventionalist.com by email. Let me know what this podcast has meant to you, what you've learned, how you've grown, how you've changed. And if you want to send me a voice note, you can do that too over the same email address, podcast@theunconventionalist.com. And I really look forward to hearing from you soon. Of course, I will let you know how to continue the journey. But if you want to find out more and get involved with my book that I'm writing at the moment, and you want to be part of that process and that journey as I look for beta readers and I send some kind of exclusive chapters and feedback and ask for your help and support and input, then make sure to drop me an email at info@theunconventionalist.com. And we'll make sure to add you to the list. But the best way to go about it is to join the newsletter. That's theunconventionalist.com/newsletter. That is where you will be able to be kept in touch with all the next steps and all that will be going behind the scenes. I think I've spoken too much already. I love you. I appreciate you. You matter. Your story has value. The world needs you to step up and serve, because more people need to feel less alone. And the fact of you sharing your story can change the trajectory of someone's life who's going to wake up knowing that there's still hope and that they're not alone. Thank you. It's been my life honor, and I'll see you in the next adventure. This episode was brought to you by BecomeTheSpotlight.com. If you are tired of being the best kept secret and you want to start connecting with the ideal audience in a big way and get your message out there so that you stop chasing opportunities and opportunities start to chase you, you need to make sure that you hit the mark on five principles. These five principles are: know yourself, own your story, play a bigger game, amplify your impact, and find your allies. This is going to take a little bit of work, but the good news is I've got a roadmap for you. Head over to www.becomethespotlight.com and take the 3-minute free assessment to figure out where you stand, what you can celebrate, and where you can improve. I can't wait to hear what your score is. That's www.becomethespotlight.com. I'll see you there.